Okay, Luke 10, starting in verse 17. Then the 70 returned with joy, saying, Lord, even the demons are subject to us through your name. And he said to them, I saw Satan as lightning fall from heaven. Behold, I give to you power to tread on serpents and scorpions, and over all the power of the enemy, and nothing shall by any means hurt you. I'm going to read a couple of things I took from Graham Cook. Have you ever gotten into any of Graham Cook's teachings?
No.
Rick Joyner?
Yeah.
Well, this is a mix of Rick Joyner and Graham Cook, so that should be interesting. We're supposed to have full authority over the enemy, but a lot of us don't really understand what that authority is or how to use it. There are demonic forces that are a really big problem that are getting ready to show up in our churches, and we have to know how to deal with those, and we've already seen some of it here, and we've seen more of it here probably than everybody knows, and we haven't always known. You know, you have somebody come in and people are going, I think that's a witch. I think that person has a Jezebel spirit. And then other people are saying, no, I think they're good people. I think they really love the Lord. I know you had some of that going on at the last church, every church. How are we supposed to know how to discern what spirits are there and what do we do with them when we do discern it? But spiritual authority comes from dwelling in the presence of God. And it's through his name, not just the using of his name. He said that we, through his name, the demons are subject to us. It's not, you know, we read the verses about whatsoever you ask in his name you shall receive. Through his name isn't just saying his name, tagging it onto the end of a prayer, or shouting his name at a devil. Through his name means through the authority of his name, knowing what he's speaking, knowing what he's telling us to do. And when you move in the authority of what he told you to do, then there is power. So in order to know what he told you to do, there has to be the relationship again. We have to have the close working communication going on with him so that we know this is this particular type of spirit. This is how I want you to take authority over it. This is what I want you to do with it. And we have to know for sure what that is. So when we're sent to do his work, we're going to encounter his enemies. There's a great awakening coming to America, and with that, there will be a greater awakening of the evil spirits. We're waking them up. We're stirring them up. When the devil was cast to the earth, he came with great anger. And I think we're making him even more angry because time is running out, and he knows that, and he sees the church getting strong. He sees God's Christians standing up, and that angers him. If you've ever dealt with somebody that has a spirit of anger controlling their life, it is really difficult for them to keep that under. And the devil is angry. He is the spirit of confusion, of doubt, of fear, of anger. So when you press his buttons hard enough, he's going to show his face. So if a person is controlled by one of those spirits and they are pressed a little bit, sometimes you unmask the spirit and it surfaces. So that's sometimes part of the identifying is recognizing he can't keep it in control. When we start pressing him, he shows his face. One thing we need to know about the schemes of the devil is that he uses traumatic experiences to get entry in our life. Traumatized people will do things they would not normally do. They can be much more open in subject. This is the intro. So I'm talking a little fast because I'm reading some quotes from Graham Cook and Rick Joyner. But when people are traumatized, they'll do things they wouldn't normally do. They're more open to a demonic influence. And as trauma increases around the world, like with Katrina, with these earthquakes, and have you been reading? They're just tremendous. I mean, there were more deaths in Tennessee from tornadoes last night. Mm-hmm. And there was like 35 last week through the southern states. And as these traumatic events are happening with terrorists or weather, we're going to see more open doors that demons move in and really get a hold of these people who are stressed and afraid and confused. And Rick Joyner said that a lot of the people from New Orleans that went to other states and churches took him in, that he began receiving reports from the churches of trouble. And the trouble linked back to these people they had brought in from New Orleans. And it was because during their trauma they had opened up doors and allowed spirits to come in. And then they ended up a problem in the church. So a trauma in our life and around the world will either bring out the best or the worst, or sometimes both, in all of us. But God uses crisis and uses it as a process to move us to a higher level, to move us closer to Him, to build our faith, to increase our power and our position of authority. God uses that crisis as a process. Birth is a crisis. I mean, think about it. They're living in this nice, safe, warm, non-threatening place, and all of a sudden, they're just lunged forth into this scary world, faces, voices, lights, sounds, colors, and they come into it screaming. And from that moment, it's a process of acclimating to their culture, acclimating to their society, learning to trust hands that touch them, everything. You know, it's a real crisis to be born. Going to kindergarten is a crisis. They have to leave mom and dad and their house, go out among strangers. Some of them aren't going to be nice to them. It's a major crisis to go to school. I think for some of us, school's major crisis all the way through 12th grade. In fact, I didn't make it through 12th grade that way. I ended up doing an at-home study. School was a horrible crisis for me. But nonetheless, if you want to learn, you have to go to school or be schooled. The teen years are a crisis. Your emotions are changing, insecurity. Thought processes are, one minute you're so mature, and the next minute you just want to play with your toys again. I mean, it's really a crisis to grow up. The first date is a crisis. You lose your voice, can't talk. Everything you say sounds stupid. You don't know how to act in a romantic situation. And marriage is a real crisis because two becoming one just doesn't go together. So both have to leave something behind to come into the unity. And coming to Christ is a crisis because it's full of changes, decisions, facing things. Your whole life is going to change. Your friends are going to change. So crisis is a process that forces change. And that's why we keep being put into crisis. So if you want to grow in faith and power and get closer to the presence of God, you need a problem. Most of us don't have any problems finding some problems. So problems will push you into a new dimension with God. Some people will give up and some people will grow up, but the problems will transform us. The big difference in our training ground and our proving grounds. When Graham Cook was in Mexico, I don't know if you know many of his stories, but when he was in Mexico on a mission, there were demons that just kept attacking him. I don't remember him ever saying how they were attacking him, because it's not like they physically come in and slap you. I mean, usually a demon comes and you start having doubt, you have confusion, you have fear. It's the emotions or the thoughts. But he knew that it was demons, and he prayed and he asked the Lord, how do I take authority over them? What do I do to break this attack? And the Lord said, plead the blood over the windows and the doors, and then worship. Make them stay and listen. Torment them with worship. So he did. He just worshipped. He jumped on his bed. He sang about Jesus. He tormented him for several hours. And then he said, okay, now the door is open and you can leave. And you better not come back. They didn't come back the whole meeting. So there's different ways to deal with demons. When you feel like God has left you, it's usually evidence that he's touching you. He's maturing you. And then he wants you to rise up and face that situation. So feeling alone, thinking, God, where are you? You're not talking to me. You're not helping me. I'm supposed to depend on you, and now you've left me alone. We think it's evidence that God has given up or left, and it's really proof that we are now mature enough to be tested, mature enough for him to back off a little bit and see what we'll do. see what will happen to our love when it's tested. Okay, we need to recognize these spirits. They have two masks that they wear. One is being an angel of light. They look like something good. The other mask they wear is their scary Halloween face. They want to look like super-powered, ugly, evil, and terrify us, so we won't dare to stand up to them. Either one, it's a mask. So when we're facing them, we want to unmask their deception and find out exactly what am I dealing with. What is the spirit? Once you've identified them, they're nothing but a dust you can blow away, a shadow that has no substance. Recognizing them, identifying them can be difficult. We need to remember again when they're trying to be scary that he said, nothing by any means can hurt you when you're walking with God. One reason that God might not reveal them to us is maybe he can't trust us with what we would do to them, or what we would do to the people who host them, I should say. I don't think he's as concerned what we do to them as he is with the people who host them. However, that one of the strangest revelations I think I ever had was that God still loves the devil. He still loves him. He loves him like we love our own child who's turned bad, acting bad, doing bad. And again, I hate to bring up the big G name, you know, but I thought about Gareth last night, or maybe it was this morning, because I got up at 5, I don't know, night from morning today, but I thought about him and I thought, Lord, I know you've warned us to put him out, don't fellowship with him, don't have anything to do with him, but I believe you still want us to love him. God never stopped loving the devil. All these demons are fallen angels that at one time he had a relationship with. He loved them very much. I don't think God ever stopped loving anyone. I think it will grieve him to put them in hell for eternity, but he'll still do it. And if you had a son or a daughter who became the axe murderer or child molester that is doing horrendous things, running a children's porn thing on online or something, you have to stop them because you love everyone they're hurting too. You have to stop them, but you can still love them. You might have to put the murderer to death so he won't murder, but you still love him. And I think that sometimes we think that if we see an evil spirit in someone's life, that that person is evil and that we need to get rid of them. And a lot of the people that are coming into the churches, even if they're coming in to attack, can still be delivered. So God has actually said this to me. I've said, Lord, I think I discerned this spirit and so-and-so at the church, you know, and it sounds like a really bad spirit. And he'll say, well, if I could trust you to do what I say, I will tell you what's in that person. And I said, well, okay. And you'll say, can I trust you to keep loving them? Yes, Lord, you can. Can I trust you not to kick them out? Yes. Can I trust you not to try to expose them when I'm not saying to expose them? Yes, Lord, you can. And then he'll say, well, that person over there has the spirit of a rapist. And I'm going, oh, my gosh. You know, that's pretty big. What if he raped somebody? He goes, no, he's not going to. He's not going to really do it. But through watching TV, watching movies, seeing it in the movie, he kind of liked it. It excited him, and he allowed that in his heart. And now he kind of carries that in his heart, and may even come in against his own wife sometimes, you know, that spirit. We saw some movie where we thought the girl was being drug off, you know, threw something over her head, drug her in another room. It was only her own husband. They liked the spirit of rape. So there's a spirit that could be there in good people doing bad things, you know. And the Lord said, no, he's not going to rape anybody. And I don't even want you to tell him that you know it's there. I just want you to start praying for him. And I did intercession. This was years ago, and I did intercession for that man for over a year, two, I don't know how long. And at one point he was going to get married, and the Lord said, he's ready now, you need to talk to him about this. And I talked to him about it, and he said, yeah, that since he was a child he had that, and he didn't want it. And we prayed, and he got set free and delivered from it, and it was gone. It was a year or 2 years before we could deal with it. He was a good man. He loved the Lord with all of his heart. But there was a stronghold in him by an evil spirit. So sometimes discerning a spirit is the beginning of warfare against it. And the only way we know how to come against it and not destroy the person is by walking with the Lord. And we may get that person pulled out of that enemy's camp in that area eventually. So one reason God doesn't tell us is because we're too quick to get afraid, we're too quick to get mad, we're too quick to get all freaky about everything. And we don't need to get freaky if we realize nothing by any means can hurt you when you're walking with the Lord and staying in His revelation about what's going on. We need to help people who are down. And you know, when you help somebody who's really in bondage and you do get them set free, they are usually the most faithful. They love God more than those who didn't have much to be delivered from, or didn't think they did anyway. The religious spirit is more dangerous. It's a demonic spirit too, but it's a more dangerous one. It's the religious temple goers who crucified Christ. However, legion full of demons fell at his feet and begged for mercy. You know, but if we would have looked at him, we would have said, well, I feel a lot safer near these Jews at the temple than I do near this legion running naked in the graveyard, you know, foaming at the mouth, whatever. I would much rather stay near the religious people. They crucified Christ. He got set free and followed Christ. So just because someone's in bondage, we really need God's wisdom. We really need the wisdom, James 3. We should never be intimidated by a demon. And that is something I'm still learning. But God has taken me to where I'm in His presence. I never forget the time He took us into the high tower. Graham Cook did it. He walked us right into, he said, we're going in a safe place with God. We're going to go into the high tower. We're going to lock the door behind us. We're in there alone and nobody can come in. We're in the safe place with God. And I go way up in this vision to the top of the tower. And there stands this vision of a demon, the black grim reaper look. You know, he's got the cape all over him. You can see little green eyes or red, I don't remember, looking out that little hood. And I'm like, why is he in my safe place, God? There's not supposed to be any demons in my safe place. This is a private place with you. And he said, I didn't bring him here. You did. I brought him in because he was inside of me. So wherever I go, he's going. God said, I'm the one who exposed him. I let you see that he is with you so that you can face him. And it was a spirit of fear. I had this terrible fear of going too far spiritually, because I grew up around a mental hospital and I didn't want to lose my mind and go off some deep end. So I was really afraid of just checking beyond reason and going off in the spirit realm. So this was a fear that I kept with me. And the Lord said, I want you to face that fear. And I want you to pull his hood off. Just take the whole robe and pull it off. And I just stood face to face with that red-eyed thing and I pulled that hood off. And he was nothing but a skeleton, skinny, weak little skeleton, and he screamed and he ran. He was afraid because I faced him. When we know that God has spoken and we know we're doing what God said, there is no demon that can stand against us. They're skinny skeletons or shadows. So I'm learning now, whenever I'm soaking, I'm worshiping, I'm praying, I'm studying, I keep having some evil thought, some evil sight of something. That's how Gareth got in my thoughts. It was last night, I think. Still don't know if it was this morning. I thought I was going to pen that down. I was worshiping God. I was just soaking. I'm in the presence of God. Everything's good. And I see a knife in a hand. And it wasn't a good thing. It was like murder, you know. And I went, wow, what is that? And it almost disappeared. And I said, no, you don't. You stay here and let me see your face. And when I saw its face, it was my face. And I went, what am I doing with a knife in my hand? And the Lord said, you have a spirit of murder in your heart. I went, I'm familiar with that because I used to wish my stepdad would die. I used to ask God to kill him. So So when he said I had a spirit of murder in my heart, I didn't argue. I said, why? Why do I have murder in my heart? And he said, Gareth actually sent the spirit of hate to you, like to make you hate him so you would hate him because he wanted you to hate. So the very one who offends you can wish, curse, whatever, curse towards you that you would hate them for it so that hate will enter you. Isn't that tricky? I mean, they do all the evil and then they wish for you to hate them. They try to make you hate them just to get hate in your heart. And I realized, I didn't think I hated him because I keep saying I still love him, but I realized that I had wanted him to die. I kept thinking the only way we'll ever be safe is if he's dead. That's the only way we'll ever be sure he won't sneak in at night and steal the babies or, you know, if he would just die, we would all be safe. I began to wish that he would die. So I said, I speak against that spirit of death. I am not wishing him dead. He's in your hands, God. You do anything you want to do with him, but I am not wishing him dead because I'm not going to have murder in my heart. So I faced it just by seeing the knife. What are you doing in my vision? Show me your face. Oh, what are you doing with my face? You're not living in me, you know. So I stripped the mask off and saw it as murder, kicked it out. It was very simple to do. I don't think that we will ever be able to stand against the demons in others until we stand against our own. And the reason we don't stand against our own is we blame ourselves for them, which brings us back to the inner healing lessons. We are created in the pure image of God. There is no evil in our spirit. We are just like God. Anything we see that is not like God doesn't belong to us. It's been infiltrated. It's been put there by the enemy. So when we see anything that we know is not God, we need to face it. What are you? What are you doing inside of me? And we need to get rid of it. And when we start getting free, then we can help set other people free like that too. The simplest things are spirits. I mean, we're not looking for the boogeyman. We're not looking for the simple things. We're not looking for the bad attitude, the anger, the impatience, the gossip, the indifference, the cold-heartedness. We're not looking for those spirits that have the stronghold in us. But the more we identify them, the more we'll recognize them in others, and we'll begin to set others free. We have been given weapons. God intends to equip us, but training comes before equipping, and before training is teaching. So we have teaching, training, then equipping. We have a little bit of practice time after we get the equipment. But first we have to understand, you do not put a gun in the hand of an untrained soldier and say, just run out there and start shooting. You know, he has to know how to recognize the enemy, how to follow the battle plan, how to stay in order, in authority. So first we have to learn everything. Then we have to be trained by practicing it in a safe place. And then we will be given the big guns, where we can really go out there and get into this war or fight them off when they come after us. And this is what's coming for this church. I mean, they're getting ready to send some big, bad enemies against this church because God is going to do some big things here. So we need to practice this in a way that we're ready when the big, big enemy steps up. All that was the introduction, which is longer than the lesson. Now, Luke chapter 10, verse 3. Go your ways. I like that ways. He sent them out many places. He's talking to the 70, so he sent them many directions. Someone just said to me, I don't need a church, because Jesus didn't need a church. He just heard from God. Jesus had a church. They traveled with him. He had 12, and then he had 70. And he was the head of it. He even let Judas be the treasurer. He even had offices appointed. Go your ways. Behold, I send you forth as lambs among wolves. I like lambs among wolves. There's no mistake there that wolves eat lambs. But Jesus said, I send you forth like the innocent, delicate little lamb to go out among the big, big bad wolf. But you're going to take him down. And into what? Oh, verse 5 and 6. And into whatever house you enter, first say, peace be to this house. And if the Son of Peace be there, your peace shall rest upon it. If not, it shall return to you again. We've heard a lot of things about spiritual warfare. I've heard it taught from the book of Galatians. You study all the fruits of the Spirit. And I've heard the weapons of our warfare are not carnal. That's true. We've heard all the armor of God. That's all good. But I was tripped up by a verse, which we're going to get to pretty soon. The verse that when you're trying the Spirit, how do you know if they're of God? And it says every spirit that confesses that Jesus Christ has come in the flesh is of God. That always confused me, because a whole lot of people confess that and they're liars. They say, yes, Jesus is of God. I believe that. He came in the flesh. And they're still liars. They're not even saved. They're demonic and they're deceivers. So I said, that's not really foolproof. I don't understand. Well, the Lord took me back to say, that's one of the proofs. And we're going to explain that one too, because it makes a lot of sense. But that's only one of the proofs. What I'm doing today is I am whetting your appetite to study more, because I found a few more proofs, a few more tests. But when we're done, you're going to find more tests. We're going to put them together, and we're going to begin to see all the ways to test the spirits. So peace, when you come to a house, and our body is like a house that houses our spirits. So when you come to a house and you say, peace be to you, if the peace of God rests upon it, it's because the Son of God is in it. But if that peace floods back to you, it's because the Son of Peace doesn't live there. Have you ever tried to pray for someone and that peace of God flows and you think, man, the peace of God is overwhelming, and all of a sudden it's just like a backwash. It doesn't go in. It just comes right back to you and they don't receive anything. It's because the Son of Peace is not the one in charge of that house. Now, that doesn't mean they're not a Christian, but it may mean they don't live at peace. They don't walk in the peace of God, at least not today. That's one sign. In verse 16, he says, he that hears you, hears me. If you know that you are speaking to them, if you know you're speaking to them the word that God told you to speak to them, and they won't hear it, then you know they're not hearing God. That would tell me that there is a spirit in this person of some nature that I need to identify. They're either in rebellion, they're in doubt and disbelief. I'm dealing with a spirit other than Christ if they won't hear what he has to say to them. They won't receive his peace. They won't hear his words. Another sign. Well, 19 comes in the middle, so I'm going to say it, but it's not a sign. Behold, I give to you power to tread on serpents and scorpions and over all the power of the enemy, and nothing shall by any means hurt you. When you're facing a situation where you know that there's an evil spirit there, whatever the evil spirit is, if it's just a bad attitude, stubbornness, there is no way that any spirit, I don't care if they start growling and spitting and pulling a knife out, they cannot hurt you when you're on a mission for God. They can't touch you. I know preachers where they've had people walk in with guns, pull them out, and threaten to shoot them. They couldn't do it. We had a hitman that was going to stab Harvey. Couldn't do it. When you're on a mission for the Lord, until your time is up, they cannot touch you. This is one of the big ones in verse 22. This is the foundation. All things are delivered to me of my Father, and no man knows who the Son is but the Father, and who the Father is but the Son, and he to whom the Son will reveal him. We wouldn't even know God except Jesus chose to reveal him to us. We would not know Jesus except the Father chose to reveal him. We couldn't even recognize Jesus in someone else except God reveals it. So the big thing is God has to reveal it. God has got to be the one to reveal. And then there's a trust issue when he reveals it. Will we believe him? We start saying it's our imagination. The reason we start saying it's our imagination is because we don't want to think evil of a good person. So you're talking with a good Christian who seems to love the Lord, and all of a sudden you think, I think this person is lying to me right now. I think they're deceiving me, or I think this person is just trying to manipulate the pastor into doing something. And you start sensing that, even witchcraft. You start sensing somebody might be a witch, and we go, but they seem to love the Lord. But they seem to be saying the right words. But their heart seems true. But I've seen them witness and win the lost. But I've seen them pray. And why do I keep thinking they're a witch? We don't trust our spirit. We don't trust the revelation he's giving us, because we don't want to think evil of someone who seems to be good. But it's very possible, one of two things. If we keep getting that check in the spirit, then we probably are really discerning it. We're walking with God. He's revealing it. We're listening. We're checking. We finally need to bring it to a place to say, God, I keep discerning this person is a witch. I'm just going to believe you. I think you're telling me that there's witchcraft here. Now, what do you want me to do about it? It's either going to be to expose somebody who's totally given over to witchcraft, and that should happen. Or it's going to be to set a good person free who's dabbled in it. They might be moving in a spirit of witchcraft. There could be the spirit of a witch that has strongly influenced them, and they don't even know it. They might be in deception themselves. So we want to set them free. But as long as we keep arguing and saying, it can't be true, it can't be true, it can't be true, we're never going to set them free or expose them if they're truly evil. So we have to start by trusting that no man knows except God reveals it. And we have to trust what he reveals and then ask him what to do with it. If we're not saying, okay, this person's a witch, I'm going to go and I'm going to tell on them and we're going to burn them at the stake. You know, if we're not taking that extreme measure of what we're going to do with the revelation, we would more quickly receive the revelation if we realized God has a purpose in it and trust him. In order for God to reveal, you have to know who he is and you have to know who you are. And we're going to come to that in verse 1 John 4:1. We're going to get into that in verse 2, but let's look at 1 first. Beloved, believe not every spirit, but try the spirits, whether they are of God, because many false prophets are gone out into the world. He's telling us again, don't believe every spirit. Try the spirits. There are ways to try them that are foolproof. Verse 2, here's how you know the Spirit of God. Every spirit that confesses that Jesus Christ has come in the flesh is of God, and every spirit that confesses not that Jesus Christ has come in the flesh is not of God. It really is as simple as it sounds. I have complicated that. But in Revelation 19:10, it says the testimony of Jesus is the spirit of prophecy. The testimony, the record of Jesus, the life of Jesus. It is the focal point of a person's life. It is the focal point, testimony of all that the person is about is Jesus Christ. Not just saying, I confess Jesus came, but the confession of their prophecies, the confession of their preaching, the confession of their life says Jesus Christ is what I'm about. He's what my testimonies are about. He is why I'm preaching to you. His purpose, his life, his whole testimony is what I'm speaking about. Maybe not at the moment I'm telling you he loves you and you need to trust him. Why? It's all about Jesus. I'm telling you that you can be healed of the wounds that happened to you when you were 3 years old. Why? Because of Jesus. He's real. It's the testimony of Christ. It has to be behind the ministry of the person, the spirit of the person. Not just that they would agree with you. When you ask them, do you believe in Jesus? Oh, yes, I do. Now let's talk about your financial prosperity. You know, it's all about something else, but not about him. And again, in 1 John 4:4, it says, you have overcome them, because greater is he that's in you than he that's in the world. They are of the world. We're still talking about those who don't have the testimony of Jesus Christ. in 1 John 4:2. How we know is that they have the confession of Jesus Christ. Well, if they are of the world, therefore they speak of the world, and the world hears them. That just reeks of the prophecies. The false prophets that come in wanting to just flatter you, wanting to tell you you have all this money coming to you, wanting to just speak about worldly things all the time. Flattery, money, wealth, friends, fame, power. It's all about worldliness. It's not about Christ. I know that somebody can be in financial despair, and a true prophet can say, it's okay. God is going to make you wealthy one day. But I believe that if they are speaking true wealth to someone, that it has something to do with the testimony of Jesus Christ. I believe that true wealth was spoken to us, that one day we were going to truly be millionaires. But at the same time, God tested our heart and said, I'm giving it to you because I have a purpose for it, and I need to channel it through someone who will let me use it. So it was still for the purposes of Christ, not just so we could live in a mansion and drive the best cars. The whole purpose was still the testimony of Christ. So I'm not saying everyone that speaks, your finances will be okay. It doesn't mean they're evil. But if their whole ministry is about feeding the flesh, there's something wrong. There's a big check. It's not the testimony of Jesus. We, in verse 6, we are of God, and he that knows God hears us. He that is not of God hears us not. Hereby we know the spirit of truth and the spirit of error. That's a really good one. Because if you take the last sentence first and say, this is how we know the spirit of truth and the spirit of error. Now let's back up. How do we know the spirit of truth and the spirit of error? By knowing that we are of God. First of all, you have to firmly know that you are of God and that what you are speaking is of God. You have to be so strong in that foundation that when somebody else doesn't hear it, you know the problem is them. Because you've just been with God. And you know you're totally giving yourself to God. You know your motive of your heart is right. You know that you belong to God. We know that we are of God. You have to know you're really in God. You're sold out to Him. And you're not speaking from your opinion and your desire. You are speaking from what God told you to speak. So, if you're testing somebody because you think that they should do this or that and they don't hear you, that's not a test. I think everybody should go to church on Sunday. I think that they should. But God didn't come to me and say, Wayne better be here this Sunday. So if I say to you, I think you should be in church on Sunday, and you say, no, I don't hear that. I don't think so. That's no test. But if God specifically came to me and said, I want you to tell so-and-so on this coming Sunday, they need to be here. And I know God told me to tell them that, and they don't hear me. Then I know that they're not hearing God. So it's specific. See, again, we're back to relationship. You got to be walking with God. You have to be firm, solid, know you're in God, know He's in you, know that you're in this relationship with Him, that you're hearing Him. So then you know anybody that never wants to hear what you have to say, when it's from God, they're in the spirit of error. They have a spirit of error because they never receive God's words. And we know we can make mistakes and we can miss it. So I don't want anybody to walk around saying, if you don't hear me, you don't hear God, you know. But when you know that they never receive what God has to say, you're dealing with somebody in the spirit of error. You have to have this strong foundation. It's a total dependency on Him in relationship and trust. John 19:35 explains testimony. If you want to look that up, means a record. Talking about the testimony of Jesus is the record. The record is Scripture. The record is, what do we know of Him? Speaking the truth of His testimony. Okay, there was something I didn't get in here. I don't know where it went. I must have skipped it. I didn't put it down. I wanted to talk about the light, and I didn't even put that down. I was reading this morning. I'm going to tell you where it was at, but I'm going to give you the idea because it was really good. Jesus was talking about raising Lazarus from the dead, and he was going to have to go back to Jerusalem to do it. And his followers said to him, "They tried to kill you last time you were there. Why would you go there again?" And at that very moment, he said to them, "Do you not know there's 12 hours in a day? And he that walks in the light won't stumble. But he that walks in the darkness will stumble. Walk while you have the day, lest ye stumble when the darkness comes." That was my main verse today, and I never got it on the paper. I can't believe it. It was my main verse because I said, I get the concept, walk in the light. Why did you say it right there? In the midst of the whole story about Lazarus, and they're saying, why are you going back to Jerusalem where they want to kill you? Why did you stop and give that lesson right in the middle of that story? And I had your dad pray for me to have a deeper revelation of it. And through that deeper revelation, I realized what he was telling them pertained to what I'm teaching today. What he was telling them was, God is our light. Jesus is our light. And we walk in the light of what he's saying and doing. We are safe. Nothing by any means can harm us. We will discern spirits. We will have power over them. We will have the authority of his name when we confront them if we walk in that light. But that 12 hours jumped out to me. When he gives us light, he shines the light at a specific time on a specific situation. And we have to walk while that light's there. Or he turns it off. Night falls on it. And then later, John 11:9. But if we don't walk in it during the time the light is shining and he turns that light off, night falls on it, then later we're trying to jump up and deal with it, and there's no power. Nothing happens. We keep addressing the spirit, the situation, and nothing happens. Or we try to run ahead before he ever turned the light on. We say, well, I see that person, and I don't know absolutely this spirit has to be in them, and I'm going to rebuke that demon. Nothing happens. They don't get set free. In the light, when he turns the light on, when he turns that light on, that light of truth, that light of knowledge, that light of revelation, that light of his presence, and he says, do this and do it at this time and do it in this way. Power of his light is shining on that thing. Like the light shining on that demon. He's exposed. He's standing face to face against Jesus, and he hasn't got a chance. But if we let the opportunity close, we lose the authority of the moment, and it doesn't work. That was just so awesome to me. That was just such a revelation of how we have to walk so close to him to know what it is, when to move, how to move. But we need to get bold enough to say, I'm going to trust the Lord. I'm going to trust that inner discernment. And I'm going to say, yes, I discern that. Now I'm taking it to God. What do I do with it? How do I do it? When do I do it? And move with that boldness to set the captives free. Very seldom, very, very, very seldom do we end up putting the person out like we did with Gareth. That's the only time in my 30 years of ministry I've seen that. Very seldom is that the result. Sometimes somebody evil may come to the church, and the answer may be they've already given themselves totally over. They are not going to be delivered. They're going to destroy the ministry. Put them out. But when it's that clear, God will make it that clear with confirmation. Sometimes they come in thinking they're going to destroy. God gets a hold of them, and he flips them, and they change and get converted. That should be our first effort. That should be the first effort. But we need to stop being afraid to say, yes, I discern it. What do you want me to do with it, God? We need to step up to the plate with this and do that. You got to do it. This is some homework for you. Review. First, I'm going to give you a little review. Have a strong foundation of who God is and who you are in him. Base your discernment a revelation on what God is telling you, not on what you think or see. Peace. You offer peace and it's refused. Truth, see if they believe it. Is there a testimony of Christ? Who's getting the glory? You don't have to write this, but there's three people that can get the glory when somebody prophesies. The speaker can get all the glory as such a wonderful, accurate speaker. The receiver can get the glory by getting puffed up in pride about what's said. Or Christ can get the glory. Okay, and this is your homework right here. I want you to search some scriptures and come up with more ways to test the spirits, to try the spirits. I can give you a couple to look at, but I'd like you to find more. One place that says, prove all things, hold fast what is good, is 1 Thessalonians 5, 20-21. And then in Galatians 5, we have the character of God and the character of the enemy. They're laid right out in Galatians 5. And that's one of the best ways to try spirits, to see what character is behind it. The fruit. I guess instead of character, you want to call that fruit. If somebody prophesied over you, what's happening in you? And that's a good test. It's not against you. If somebody prophesied over you and they could say, you are going to be the best singer that ever lived on the face of the earth. I mean, when you sing, people are just going to crumble and fall to the ground and weep in repentance because you have this awesome anointing of God, and that's what's going to happen. If it's of God, if it's truly from God, it will probably humble you. It'll probably make you go, God, I can't, I could never, why me? I don't deserve it. I haven't served you that well, you know. It'll humble you. But sometimes when it's coming from and through a bad spirit, it'll lift you up in pride. The words still might be true. False prophets often speak the truth, but it will cause a different fruit in you. So test yourself after you're prophesied over. And again, it may be that they were a false prophet or speaking false flattery. Doesn't make them a bad person, just means they might flatter people to win friends. Or they might have spoken true and then the enemy came into you and attacked you with pride about it. But always test your own spirit after you receive prophecy. We're going to go into that giving and receiving prophecy at a different time, the ways to be careful with it. But what do you think? Make you want to go chase devils? Go home and chase them out of your own house? We have a thing we do with kids when they're big enough to understand it. Jackson's just about ready for it. We start talking to them about, we don't say demons and devils, we don't like scare little kids, so we say attitudes. And we'll say, you have an attitude of meanness on your face, or you have an attitude of rebellion, stubborn, and God doesn't like it. You need to peel that off your face and throw it out and tell it, no, you can't be on my face. And it starts teaching them to battle against those feelings when they come on them. In a way, you don't scare them with devils, just attitudes, you know. But a lot, I do adults too, adults that don't like the word demon, we just say attitude. Same difference. You battle it just as effectively with that name. Any questions? No? I think we're early. Not very. 4:10. Get it out. Okay, well, we'll have to make sure everybody else does their homework. How come this never just turns off for me?